Here in Proverbs chapter 12, verse 1, he says, and I'll read it to you again, "Whosoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid." Now, everybody in this room, we understand the polar opposites of love and hate. We just understand that. In the scripture here, love is a willingness to accept and actually to desire the right and godly direction and counsel that helps us, the discipline that gets us down the road, that gets us where we're going. Discipline meaning help in learning how to do things, even if it's just learning how to do things to get along in life and get on down in life. Reproof is a person who rejects or looks at this discipline or this instruction or guidance, and they reject it as being something harsh or something that is despised. Both the word discipline and the word reproof actually have the same definition. It just depends on which way you come from it. Reproof and discipline are guidance that help you get down the road. If you accept the guidance, it's called discipline to help you become better in what you're doing. If you reject the guidance, it's called reproof. Reproof is when you despise what's been told to you, and you accept it as good discipline when you accept it, when it's been told to you. Now, the way God made us, every one of us, has at least one person in our family who is a know-it-all, who thinks they know everything about everything. And when someone comes along to try to instruct them or tell them how to do something, they accept that instruction as reproof and they despise it because they don't know as much as that person knows. So in your family, even if your family's a family of one, and it's just yourself, there's probably one of you in your family that in some way, form, or fashion despises reproof. We all despise reproof. We all. If you love discipline, then what happens is you really are loving knowledge, because whatever someone is telling you, it adds to what you know, and you get a little further down the road. I'm going to give you another quick example of this. There's a project going on where I'm gathering information about it. And as this project, doing it for Brother John, and as this project goes on, I am literally uncovering every possible stone that can be moved to find out what is under that stone about this project. Gathering the facts. My stack is about that tall on paperwork on this project, just so I can have an answer when people ask me, what about this, what about that? Okay, I've checked it out. One area of this project was I needed to know what it cost. And so we went to an appraiser and we received a legal binding. A legal commercial appraisal of the value of this on this project. And that's from one side. And then I thought, now I need to find out what it's really worth. What it's really worth. So I contacted some commercial agents in this field. And they came out and told me what comparatives are already selling for or not selling for or whatever. The two prices are not anywhere near. Not anywhere near. But the reality is one's just saying this is possibly what it's worth. The other one is saying this is what people are buying for. You see me? Okay. So if someone says, do we have appraisal on it? I say, yes. Do we have any comparatives on it? I'm going to say, yes, I've got my information. And every little bit of piece of information that I gather leads me to another question to go find out a little bit more information. So I am prepared. The Bible tells us that the fool is the person who goes and begins to build a tower and doesn't count the cost. And then whenever he's halfway built, he does not have enough money to finish it. And what do the people think about him? He is a fool. You follow me? The wise person seeks wise counsel from people who know the industry. Now, I can have this whole project worked out in my mind of how we can finish it and figure it out and do it. But if I don't know that little tidbit of information and I don't have it that from that expert, I don't have all the information. The fool is the one who hates and thinks he knows it all, and the reality is he is stupid. Now, the word stupid is not really the best word here. The word here should be used as the biblical word as the word ignorance is used. The word ignorance is a person that's used, a person who responds back to things that are being said in a cruel, in a harsh, in a insensitive, in a mentally stubborn manner. We all know people like this. You're just trying to help, and you say something to them, and boy, does the wrath of Satan come back at you whenever you say something to them. And you thought, I was just trying to help. It doesn't matter. You just walk away. Just, you know, you walk away from because they are not interested in your help. Verse 2, a good man will obtain favor from the Lord, but he will condemn a man who devises evil. This theme has already come up several times in the Proverbs. Several times. However, the emphasis in this theme is not really on the favor and the condemnation. It's on who's doing it. In this instance, it's about the Lord. The Lord will give favor to those who are doing good. The Lord will condemn those who are doing evil. This proverb deals with the actions of the Lord. The one who is good is going to feel the kindness of the Lord coming to them. The one who is evil is going to feel the attack of the Lord coming upon them. One is good, one is evil. And to the Lord, good and evil are worlds apart. Where are you on that? Where do you stand? I ask myself that question all the time. Where am I in this process of good and evil? Have I done something that the Lord is going to declare me guilty of doing? Or is the Lord going to show me his kindness? Where am I in that process? Verse 3 says this. A man will not be established by wickedness, but the root of the righteous will not be removed. You know, some people never settle down. They never settle down. They never grow up. They never establish a home. They never seek eternal things. They never amount to much. 2 weeks ago in my office, I had a woman and a man, a husband and a wife. He was 92. She was 91. And we were talking about last things. Not exactly biblical last things. We were talking about here on earth last things. Like burials and funerals and just preparing. And I asked them about their children. And oh, they talked about one. Wonderful. Talked about a second. Fabulous. The third one, well, that child has never grown up. That child's never amounted to much. In fact, almost what I've written for you in the commentary was right out of Mama's mouth. Now remember, Mama's 91. The one that's never amounted to much, never grown up, she's 71 right now. Do things never change? That may not give you much hope if you've got a 30 or a 40-year-old right now who hadn't grown up, you know? I guess when they get to 70, 71, they're going to be the same. I guess it's who we are, right? We don't think about that. What are we going to do when we grow up? You know, I'm 45. I'm going to go back to school and get me a college degree. What for? Well, I want to know what I'm going to do when I grow up. At some point in time, we got to realize if you're past about 23 or 24, you better be putting down roots. You better be establishing yourself. That's what he says, a righteous person. A righteous person settles down. A righteous person grows up, establishes a home. Now, it doesn't have to be a home with a husband and kids. It could, if you're single, been single all your life, God has called some of us to that. That just means you've put down roots. And when the storms of life come, you're not shaken at all. Some of y'all live in the same neighborhood I do. At the corner of Greens Cove Way and Oak Links, there was this huge tree. Tree probably reached 85 feet into the air. It was gorgeous. It was beautiful. Sitting right on the corner. But I had suspected several years ago that lightning had struck it. Some branches were in a storm, were down on the ground. And I really thought it looked like a lightning strike. So over the years, sure enough, the tree had begun to rot down in the base. Now remember, this tree is, well, I'll just tell you the story I'm telling you. This tree's big enough around that the whole bottom of it was rotting out to where I could walk inside the tree. It's kind of a neat little cave to be in. Got it? And I thought about it even more. I thought, you know, I'm gonna go get me some fence planks, and I'm going to make a little rabbit door for, you know, to put on it so I could take a picture of it. I never got the opportunity because I just didn't have time. But in the midst, I contacted my homeowner association. I said, listen, we've got a tree out here. It's in one of our little park areas that it's going to fall on the street, maybe even on the house, if we don't do something about it. I never did anything about it. Sure enough, the storms came through. Do you know what happened to the tree? Yeah, it's laying over. It is laying over. That tree, now I can see, had rotted back to where it did not have a good root system. It looked beautiful up on the top, but there was nothing firm holding it in place. Except for now, you can use it like a tent because you can still crawl into the hole, except it's sideways. You know, I guess you could get out of the storms and not worry about it falling. Now, it's kind of neat when you're a kid, but at some point in time, you got to realize as an adult, these places are dangerous, could be dangerous. We all, according to Solomon telling Rehoboam, we need to take this understanding to us that we need to establish ourselves such that nothing can shake us. Going on in verse 4 says this, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is as rottenness to his bones. What's a crown? A crown we think of as being metal crowns, but actually most of the time they were leaves wrapped around vines. Crowns were worn by people like government officials, athletes when they won something, religious leaders. Basically these three sectors of life. With a crown comes pride that you've accomplished something or you have attained something. Now, obviously, as men, we are not going to wear our wives wrapped around our heads as our crowns. That's not what he's talking about here. What he's talking about is that this wife that a man chooses, how she acts, what she does, how she's looked upon in the community, affects how the community looks upon the man. Now, don't be offended by this, but in this day, women and wives were considered as property. Men, although they were property, they had a mind of their own. And men who would have different jobs, and we have examples in Proverbs 31 where there's a man who sets at the gate to be a judge. And Proverbs 31 talks about the excellence of his wife. That's very interesting. People will come to a man to seek counsel to get something done. And they'll say, you know, he's a good man. He's a good man. He's a wise man. He's a man of integrity, I think. We've never seen him do anything wrong or anything bad. If that man has a good wife, who, you know how women are, they know more about each other than men know about each other. Did you know that? Did you have that figured out yet? You know, two men can be working side by side in an organization, and the men cannot tell you the names of the other man's children. It'll be, you know, my child hit a home run at baseball team. Oh, yeah, ready, right? Yeah, yeah, good. Okay. Now, if moms are together and she says, my child hit a baseball, the conversation just takes off. What was his name? Oh, it's Johnny. Oh, Johnny. Well, has he been playing for very long? And we know everything. Women know everything about every little nitpicking, everything. And besides that, within an hour, they've already told it to somebody else. This is the way women are. So if a man has a wife that is full of integrity, a virtuous woman, it's known in the city. What that has done for the man, it has cast a tremendous advantage upon the man because of the goodness of the wife. But let's flip to the other side. Suppose your name is Hosea, and God has told you, and you've listened to God, to marry a certain woman by the name of Gomer, and Gomer happens to be a prostitute, and you happen to be a preacher. Now, think about what the community thinks about you as a husband and as a preacher based on what they know about Gomer, the wife, who's a prostitute. And as the years pass, Gomer has three children. But Hosea is not the father of any of them, even though she's been married to Hosea the entire time. What reputation does that cast upon Hosea's family? You know what I'm talking about, don't you? It's not a good reputation. They're not going to listen to anything Hosea says, because Hosea, whether God told him her or not, told him to be what he is or not, they're not going to listen to Hosea because of the poor choices Hosea has made. Hosea hasn't made poor choices. It was God's choice. And everything Hosea told them came to pass. He warned them. And Hosea also said to the northern kingdom, you are to God like Gomer is to me. Did it make any difference? No, didn't make any difference. Did not stop the people from treating God the way Gomer was treating Hosea. So Gomer is not a good example of a crown around the head of her husband. In fact, it's very interesting. Paul even talks about a good wife in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 7, when it says, for a man ought not to have his head covered, since he is the image and the glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man, or of man. Wives, you are so important in the plan and the package of the marriage and of the relationship, that it does matter what you do. It does matter what you say. It does matter how you act. It does matter how you dress. It does matter how you present yourself. And I will go on to tell you this. It does matter how you dress your husband. It does matter how you let him act. It does matter how the things that you let him do. It does matter about the things you allow him to participate in. Because you are the glory of the man. You are there for a reason. A disgraceful wife, constantly doing things that are terrible in the sight of the people, brings dishonor, tears down, where a good wife builds up. In fact, I will tell you this. A man can be thought to be better than he is if he has a good wife, because they judge the man based on the wife. They do. They will also judge the wife based on the man, but you got to realize, in most cases, it's the wife who makes the better presentation. Have any of y'all ever seen the difference between a man and a woman? Women are just prettier than men. And women just know how to decorate better. And women just know how to make a better presentation. Not all, not absolutely all, but pretty much across the board. Here it goes, verse 5. The thoughts of the righteous are just, but the counsels of the wicked are deceitful. Deceitful. A righteous person thinks about others. A righteous person considers the feelings of others and the ramifications of his decisions. Sometimes he has to go ahead and make a decision that's not going to be popular by others, but he's made that decision based on a bunch of information. Wicked people don't care who they've hurt along the way. They do not care about others. Wicked people will give advice that is self-serving. It's not about what the person who needs the advice, it's about what the counselor can get out of the person seeking advice. If a person asks a wicked person for advice, the advice, I promise you, is going to be warped in some way, because that wicked person is going to devise a plan by which that wicked counselor can profit from that plan. Profit. Godly people learn, and we don't take counsel for those who are deceitful and want to take advantage of us.